man was murdered overnight on Chicago's South Side. Police say it happened execution style in the Gresham neighborhood.
What was a violent night in Chicago? 9 people were shot in just 5 hours. 1 person died.
124 people have been killed so far this year, 1 per day. About the number of Americans killed during the same period in Iraq and Afghanistan.
Epidemiologist Gary Slutkin moved to Chicago after a decade of trying to eradicate TB in Africa. He noticed the violence that was plaguing his city looked and acted like a disease. So he founded an organization called Ceasefire to fight it. Gary Slutkin describes Ceasefire's inoculation program called the Interrupters.
Violence is like the great infectious diseases of all history. I mean, we used to look at people with plague, leprosy, TB, as bad and evil people, and something needs to be done about them, and they were put in dungeons. What perpetuates violence can be as invisible today as the microorganisms of the past were. You can judge it, but it's not what we do in science. Violence is a two-step process. The first thought is, I have a grievance. He looked at my girl, he called me a name, he disrespected me, he owes me money. He's a Sunni, he's a Palestinian, he's an Israeli. The second thought is that grievance justifies violence.
At the end of the day, man, nobody don't win, man.
Our work is about thought too. So the interrupter's role, like the TB disease control worker's role, is to do this initial interruption of transmission.
Documentary filmmaker Steve James, of Hoop Dreams fame, was so inspired by the work of the Interrupters that he made a film about them. It is simply called The Interrupters. Anne Strainchamp spoke with Steve James about this powerful, heartbreaking, and inspiring film.
Well, a violence interrupter is a person that works for this organization, Ceasefire, and their job is to mediate violent conflict in the neighborhoods around the city that they're working in. And these interrupters are, more often than not, they're ex-gangbangers or drug dealers or convicts or all three. And they're now doing this work, this very redemptive work of working in their old neighborhoods. And because of who they once were and because of their connections and contacts and the respect they've earned in those neighborhoods, they're able to sort of, as Teo Hardeman, who founded the Ceasefire program, says, hopefully intercept whispers when things are about to jump off or when there's a problem, that they can kind of step in and try to prevent it from escalating or retaliation.
We should talk about a few of them. There are three in particular you follow, and they are such remarkable people, each of them in very different ways. How did you meet Amina?
Well, as soon as I set eyes on Amina and found out a bit about her background, and seeing that she was one of only 2 women at the time doing this work, this interruption work, it was sort of like, well, we've got to talk to her. I mean, and the fact that she was the daughter of Jeff Fort, you know, one of the most notorious gang leaders in the history of Chicago crime, which is saying a lot. And so,
Amina, she had herself been an enforcer, right?
Yeah, she had worked for a very prominent drug ring as an enforcer. So Amina is a force of nature. We saw that before we were able to get her to agree to be in the film, and we certainly saw that, you know, while filming her.
And then what about, there's another guy you follow, Kobe?
Yeah, Kobe Williams. You know, it's interesting. When we started out, we had our eye on a few people that we thought would make great subjects, Amina being one of them. Some of the other guys that we had our eye on, you know, they, for whatever reason, decided that the cameras would be a problem for them, or they weren't interested in participating. Kobe emerged. He really kind of found us. He started calling us and saying, you know, I've got a situation in a parking lot where these guys got into it, and I'm mediating this, and I think you could be there if you want to be there. Do you want to come? And we'd be like, well, yes, we want to be there. And so Kobe, you know, really was a guy that showed a real ability to sort of get us into situations that you might not think we could get into. And he had this terrific way of sort of playing it off as not a big deal. He approached it very much the way I approach shooting documentaries, which is to not make it a big deal, to just sort of say, we're just doing this little thing here and it's no big deal. And Kobe was tremendously skilled at that. And then as we got to know Kobe, of course, we thought, what an amazing guy. You know, he has this very teddy bearish quality, this sort of everybody's friend, But he'd come from a tough background, and he'd used those skills of winning people's trust as an interrupter to great effect.
Did you ever feel in danger yourselves, you and the crew?
You know, there was one situation with Eddie Bocanegra, the third interrupter that we follow. We filmed a scene with him in his old neighborhood, Little Village. That was a great scene, and with an ex-gangbanger. In fact, it was with the guy that had been paralyzed that caused Eddie to retaliate and commit murder. And he was trying to get this guy out of the gang life. And after we had shot that scene, which was a great scene, word came down from the gang leader that Eddie wasn't to have us over there anymore filming anybody involved in the gang, and that that scene could not be in this movie. And, of course, we respected that, because to do anything otherwise would have really put Eddie at risk, if not us at risk. But that was it. I mean, when we were actually out there, I never really felt in any real danger. And part of that was because we were with the interrupters. And part of it probably was because I had the camera in front of my face. And you have some false sense of separation.
Like you've got a shield up.
A little bit. I think you feel that. You're looking at it through a frame, yeah. You know. And even though you feel very much in the moment, it still feels like you're filming a movie and not being part of the scene.
Though there are moments when, you know, it is clear just how risky the work the Violence Interrupters is doing for them, too. I mean, you visit one guy in the hospital.
Yeah, I love that scene where Tio visits the young interrupter who was shot trying to mediate a situation. Absolutely. And there was another situation that didn't make it into the movie where one of the interrupters, a very experienced interrupter, one of the older guys who'd done this since the start of the program, got shot in his legs. The work is really, I mean, it's amazing the risks they take. And I think what's interesting about it is I think that most all these guys around the table have had a lifetime of being around those kind of risks. They've either been shot at or shot, or in some cases, they've shot people. They're very cognizant of safety, but I don't think they think of it in the same way that we might think of it if we were trying to do that work.
Something that struck me, it's just a small thing, but a couple of different times in the film, a couple of different people who have changed their lives describe themselves as having done a 360, you know, turn their lives around 360 degrees. And I was thinking about it and thought, you know, 360 degrees, that's a full circle. It's right. Not that they've made a, you know, right turn and gone a different direction to, in some ways it's as though they've come back to the beginning, come back to who they meant to be.
We had the same revelation. We at one point, late in the process when we were editing, we were sitting around there and just, you know, sort of marveling at the change people are able to make. And, you know, every documentary, well, maybe not every documentary, but a lot of documentaries love to capture that, you know, in a person's life. It's one of the fundamental tenets of drama is change, right? And it just dawned on us. It's like, wait, maybe what this is really about is people finding their way back to who they always wanted to be to begin with. And, you know, Kobe's wife describes him as a nerd. I don't think people in the streets described him as a nerd when he was in the game, but he was probably always this teddy bear. I know he was from talking to people. He was always this teddy bear of a guy, a good guy, a guy you could trust, even when he was in that life. And that's who he is today, but he's not doing all that other stuff. And Amina, I think Amina was always a force of nature, you know, no matter what she did. But now she's a force of nature for good. And Eddie is probably one of the most sensitive, thoughtful guys I've ever met in my life. And if you told me when I met him that this is a guy who committed murder, I would have said, you're absolutely crazy. That's not possible. And you're absolutely right. I think that that's another way to look at this is that people are looking for ways to just be the person they always wanted to be. And they've given themselves permission or they've had help in getting there.
It's almost as though, to go back to that disease metaphor, the disease model of violence, it's almost as though they've been ill and now they've recovered.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. It's like they've found the cure.
How y'all doing? I understand that on August 24th, 2007, that me and two other fellas came in here and stuck the place up. I know I'm deeply sorry. I know I made a mistake. I was 15. And I was following the crowd, but now I'm older. I'm more mature than I was, and I wanted to let y'all know that I was sorry for what I did on my behalf. I don't know how these two other brothers feel about themselves, but I know I made a complete 360 during my almost 3 years being incarcerated.
Well, with me, my daughter was here, and my baby, And you just don't know the impact that you put on my life. Holding us with guns. I'm nervous right now even meeting you. And I thank God that you have changed your life. But you just don't know what they have did to me and my kids. I deal with this every day. Every day of my life. Every day. You came in here, you asked for a haircut. You left back out. You came back in. And you did this to my kids. And Jeremy held my baby with a gun up to his head. And then filth on my daughter with a gun. And then you told my co-worker, Rhonda, that you were gonna kill her because she was calling the police. My life was in your hands. I didn't know if you was gonna kill me. My daughter kept saying, Mama, we gonna die. And I hold my babies. And when you wanna tell your kids, when you wanna protect your kids, and you can't at that moment, y'all put us 7 people in the little bathroom. We didn't even know what was gonna happen to us. But I'm just glad that you're a changed man. You look better, but you know what? I'm okay, I'm a better person now. And I hope that, you know, you be a better man. That's all I'm saying.
A scene from the film The Interrupters. Steve James was the director. He's best known for his film Hoop Dreams. He spoke with Anne Strangechamps.